Blog Talk Radio.
Thursday afternoon edition of Politically Direct. I am the Professor Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here this afternoon, the 22nd of March, the year 2018. Again, as we continue to celebrate Women's History Month, I want to send a shout out to all the ladies making a difference every day, those who have in the past, the ones doing it today, and of course, the ones working for the future. Again, I want to thank you all for listening tonight here from wherever you are throughout the Garden State and, of course, throughout the good old U.S. And again, happy Women's History Month to all the ladies throughout the land. You can always write to the show's inbox, folks, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I'll give you any suggestions for guests or any feedback about the show thus far. Again, the response has been overwhelmingly positive, so I'm very grateful to all my listeners. Hopefully, I'll do my best not to disappoint you here. But if you have any suggestions, again, for topics or future guests, again, write to the show's inbox, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, folks, at politicallydirectnj. And also you can follow me directly on Instagram at @your_favorite_Fernando. Of course, following me on Twitter is greatly appreciated, at Fernando Uribe Jr. And of course, lastly, for all you Facebook subscribers, I ask you please go to the official page for Politically Direct, like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you this afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Don't be shy and call me toll-free, 818-572-8032. Again, our toll-free number, 818-572-8032. And our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. And coincidentally, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget that every single day, make it a point to check out Insider NJ. You can do so by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the entire political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. No one does it better than Insider NJ. So go to their website, sign up for their morning intelligence briefings delivered conveniently right to your inbox every single morning, folks. So as you're having your breakfast, walking the dog, whatever, you'll be on your smartphone most likely. Check it out. The morning intelligence briefing, trust me, no one does it better. So start your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed this afternoon and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, or the staff. Again, folks, I invite you to call in to this afternoon, 818-572-8032. Again, a very special Thursday afternoon edition here on Politically Direct. We will return to our regularly scheduled programming next week, next Thursday night, of course. We always come to you live every Thursday night at 8 p.m. But again, a special Thursday afternoon edition today, and hopefully everyone was safe with the snow here throughout New Jersey. I don't know about you folks, but I cannot wait for spring. I'm tired of winter. I can't wait to see the flowers blooming. I can't wait to see warmer afternoons. And honestly, I'm excited for baseball season. A week from today, it's starting. So it just reminds me that spring is right around the corner, folks. So let's hope that yesterday's storm is the last we'll see of old man winter. And hopefully we'll have much brighter, sunnier, and warmer days ahead here in the Garden State. Folks, a lot to talk about today. Have my guest coming on in just a moment, so I'm very much looking forward to having him on the show. Without question, ladies and gentlemen, again, I can't tell you enough. If you want to call in this afternoon and opine about the program or anything going on in the state of New Jersey, again, 818-572-8032. That's toll-free number this afternoon, to call in. And as always, toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Folks, I can't tell you enough. You know, obviously, after celebrating a little over a year already online, I can't say how proud I am to partner with Insider NJ and really all the great people that work with Insider. I'll tell you, it's a great experience, and I'm happy to be here. And speaking of all the great people that work at Insider NJ, it's my honor tonight, this afternoon, to welcome in the editor-in-chief of Insider NJ, my colleague, good friend of mine, the great Max Pizarro. Max, welcome to Politically Direct.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Fernando. Great to be here.
It's good to have you, Max. A lot to talk about, so let's get started here. Certainly, a lot of great articles. As I mentioned, I plug Insider NJ every week. Of course, you put up so much informative and really interesting content. Let's start, and I know it sounds a little biased on my part, but I'm in Hudson County. Let's start with Hudson County right now because it seems to be the epicenter of the political drama in New Jersey right now. For our listeners tonight that aren't really aware of what's going on in Hudson County, there's a civil war that seems to be brewing right now. How do you see it materializing?
Well, I think it's really a function of young lion versus old lion, Fernando. I think Brian Stack, 10 years ago, waged war with the HCDO. And I think that at that time, peace appeared more advisable in the aftermath because he didn't have any real allies that he could build a rebellion with. And once he was able to secure the Senate seat that he sought in that war, there was some discussion at the time, I remember, about the possibility of him undertaking a wider takedown of the power structure in the county, and he didn't do that. But when Steve Fulop, Jersey City, won the mayoralty in that city about 4 years ago, 5 years now, I think that ally appeared for Stack to build a relationship, and it was not too surprising thereafter. We all saw Stack's chief of staff go to become the chief of staff for Steve Fulop, and a real relationship to develop there. And so I believe that we have these two relatively young members of the Democratic Party who have teamed up and have the votes, or so they say, in their local party committees, and unified with some other support, they have declared that they will not back incumbent Hudson County Executive Tom DeGise. And I think that their declaration has other implications, namely Albio Cires, and again, Fernando, implications that are generational, because these are all older guys that they're taking on. We're looking at Nick Sacco, the senator from North Bergen, Tom DeGise, the county executive, and Albio Cires, the congressman. They're all part of that older establishment. And a little younger, Stack and Fulop, I think, are just trying to get Hudson to another era that more obviously bears their fingerprints.
Well, you know what, Max, what's interesting, and I'll sort of add a little bit of a local flavor because I talked about this on my local podcast last night, and you're right, just to piggyback on what you just said right now about it seems very generational. I mean, you're having Tom DeGise, the county executive, and pretty much his strongest allies in this fight seem to be U.S. Representative Cires, and even though he hasn't come out publicly, it seems like it's understood that the senior United States Senator, Bob Menendez, is going to jump on board to support the G's. And you have that faction on one side, and then you have State Senator and Mayor Stack here. You have Mayor Fulop in Jersey City. You have a couple of other mayors, the Mayor Ballin Hoboken, the mayor in West New York. And you're starting to see the seeds being planted. And, you know, the interesting thing about you mentioned about Stack is that, you know, 10 years ago, he ran off the line he ran off the HEDO line and he won. And I think that really empowered him to sort of be that power player here in Hudson County. Of course, as a state senator, I mean, let's be honest, I don't know of anybody that has a better ground game than Stack does statewide, Max, because I'll be honest with you, he was able to get 200 plus people down into District 3 to help Steve Sweeney with that election. Make no mistake about it, Stack had a large role to play in Sweeney getting reelected. He sent people, he sent foot soldiers down there, and it worked for Sweeney. So Stack's power is it's pretty well known. Do you think it's enough to overcome this sort of generational gap you see?
So I think that a lot of it is perception. Perception is reality in politics, and I don't think there are many people who would dispute what you just said about Stack's power that comes from local control. And I think that, again, if we're going back to all politics is local, Stack certainly embodies that ideal. And by teaming up with Phillip, I believe that it's going to be a fairly compelling alliance, Fernando. And look, to your point, we were looking back in 2007 for Stack maybe to design the next takedown, if you will, of someone else in power, and he didn't do it. He built alliances such as they were. We were also looking for Steve Phillip to go after DeGeese 4 years ago after he became mayor. Everyone talked about Freeholder O'Day potentially taking on that role, but again, Phillip waited. And so I think whether it was 2007 or 2013, we were seeing the seeds sown for some future barricade, and we've arrived at that point now. I don't think that these two fellows could see a political universe in Hudson with the power they've amassed in which they would allow DeGeese, who's already gotten off a couple of times, to continue. They really do want to put their own people in there.
Well, Max, the thing that's interesting, and I'll sort of ask you because I know your sources are infinitely better than mine, it just seems like this alliance is very weird, only because, I don't know if you've heard this same thing, but I know I've heard it on different fronts, that why Stack would trust Phillip in forming this alliance, because, again, going back to when Steve won the mayor's office in 2013, let's be honest, the day after he got inaugurated, we already started seeing the seeds being planted for him trying to run for governor. And when that fell through, and it depends who you talk to statewide, you'll hear different reasons why Steve pulled out and all that, but it seemed like he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way when he pulled out. And, a lot of people statewide have told me on the basis of anonymity, like, Fernando, honestly, Phillip isn't someone you should trust. And, I'm not saying this to smear the mayor. I know Steve. But again, this is just the word that's been put out there. And it seems like, Stack with his clout and the power that you said he's amassed, I find this to be a very weird alliance. Have you heard the same thing?
Well, I think that's an interesting take. I do believe that it's more the mayor of Jersey City that he's forged a convenient alliance with than a personal connection. So in other words, the mayor of Jersey City is on paper the most powerful political mayor in Hudson County, who has the potential to oversee the most county committee votes, right? And so by forging that alliance with the mayor of Jersey City, Stack just increases his own power. So I don't think it's so much a function of him either getting on or not with Steve Phillip as it is a very pragmatic and calculated move to get the mayor of Jersey City on his side and thereby reduce the power that his rival wields, as Nick Sacco in North Bergen.
Well, that'll be interesting because, again, we know that State Senator Sacco is also the mayor of North Bergen. His election's coming up May 2019. I know the primary for Tom DeGeese as county executive is June 2019. Do you see maybe – again, I've heard this, Max, and, I know your sources are much better than mine. It seems like taking out DeGeese systemically, almost like a calculated move to, neutralize and even weaken Sacco. Have you heard the same things as I have?
I think that it's hard, Fernando, not to see – the implications. They start with DeGeese, and then they go to Ceres, and then at that point, perhaps Sacco thinks about not running for re-election. I can't imagine that he's in such a weakened condition a year from now that he would lose re-election, but certainly with these other pieces of his empire either absent or reduced, I think his world gets a lot smaller.
Interesting, interesting. Well, you know, listen, and again, you great articles you've published on this story. I know you've been really ahead of the curve of everybody else in the state, really talking about Hudson, because, you know, Hudson still remains a very important epicenter of politics in New Jersey. I mean, I know it may not have the clout it once had statewide, but Hudson County politics is still an interesting topic around the coffee table, as they say, right, Max, statewide?
So it sure is.
It definitely is. And so let's try to move on a little bit more statewide here. A couple of other interesting tidbits I know that you've been writing about. I know that, for example, it's only a few months into the new administration for Governor Murphy, Max, but what's been the feedback statewide, whether it's been legislators or advocates? It seems like Governor Murphy, aside from the budget he introduced, which we'll get to in a few minutes, it seems maybe there's a mixed reaction statewide in terms of what's being put out there in terms of policy initiatives, whether it's marijuana legalization, whether it's the minimum wage. What have you heard in terms statewide about right now the favorability of Governor Murphy?
It's tough to assess, Fernando, because it is so early and because there is inevitably so much negativity from the political classes in New Jersey. There's an entrenched insider, if you will, political mindset that resists change, that resists newcomers, that thrives on being in the know. And so naturally, and again, John Corzine comes to mind because he also had that background in the finance industry. Coming into politics in New Jersey, I just believe that there's a natural resistance here as well to Phil Murphy. And, of course, we have a very powerful Senate president who himself wanted to be governor, who has his own agenda in Steve Sweeney. And so there's real resistance to Murphy, and there are some problems with the agenda he's put forward. You mentioned marijuana legalization. Some of his on allies are resistant to marijuana legalization. I'm thinking of Senator Dick Cody, Senator Ronald Rice. These were early supporters of the governor's when he was running, and they have expressed a real opposition to full-blown legalization of marijuana. And so it's interesting because you'd imagine that a Democratic Party that is fully in control of both houses of the state house and of the governor's office, and with some significant resistance to Trump's agenda on the national level, you'd imagine that Democrats would be rowing in the same direction. And in fact, they're not. There's considerable insider distrust, I would say, or not distrust so much as just an overconfidence with Democrats empowered in this state. I saw it before under Bush, where Democrats could blame Bush for everything that they themselves were mangling.
Sure.
They're doing it again with Trump, right? And so that there's a certain sense that they don't need to really be in synchronicity all the time, and they're certainly not.
Well, what's interesting, Max, and I've had the pleasure of State Senator Stack and State Senator Cunningham, both on my local podcast in recent months. And I posed the scenario to them about outright legalization, and they seem very hesitant. So the names you mentioned in terms of State Senators Cody and Rice, respectively, it seems like if that bill was put to a vote today on the Senate floor, Max, I don't think it would pass. So it's interesting in terms of the dynamic you mentioned about, well, just because it's complete Democratic Party control in New Jersey doesn't mean it's a unified Democratic Party, because let's be honest, Northern Democrats, you know, one thing is Democrats up here where I am in Hudson County, it's a much more urban area. But if you have a D next to your name in Bergen County, or maybe let's say, you know, Union or Middlesex, it's a very different Democrat. And also in the South as well, right, Max? Very different Democrats we're talking about here.
No question about it. And clearly, Steve Sweeney, as the leader of an alternative tax to what the governor has proposed, the governor wants a millionaire's tax. Sweeney wants a 3% surcharge on corporations making over $1 million in order to generate revenue, state revenue. they're going to have to work that out, Fernando, but it speaks to some of the regional priorities. I will say this, just this afternoon in Jersey City, and it goes to your point, the governor spoke in favor of raising the wages of Port Authority workers at the airport, and he had a real win today. And remember, it was those workers, 32BJ, SEIU, who supported the governor, and they wanted his advocacy on issues like this, on better pay for workers. And he had a win today. The Port Authority voted in favor of raising those wages incrementally to $19 over a five-year period. And it's that kind of issue that he's going to have to celebrate at the moment, because it's going to be thornier and more difficult to navigate, yes, the entrenched, divergent political priorities of the Democratic Party in New Jersey statewide.
No, definitely it's going to be something to watch, because, again, even though it's the early months, I know, listen, Governor Murphy's been very ambitious in terms of some of his policy initiatives. We're going to find out exactly how much unity he's going to get from, you know, within his own party. I mean, it's easy to say that many Republicans aren't going to support a lot of his policies, if any, but it'll be very interesting to see what Democrats are going to come out really for him during this first term. You know, folks, again, if you're just tuning in right now, it's 20 minutes past the hour. It's my pleasure to have the editor-in-chief of Insider NJ, my colleague, Max Pizarro, on the program here. Max, a couple of interesting things. Jay Weber scheduling a fundraiser in Congressional District 11. What have you heard about Jay's chances about really not just winning that, you know, winning the primary in that district, but maybe winning the race outright? Do you like Jay's chances going into this November?
Fernando, it's a great subject. And Weber is one of the smarter people I've met in New Jersey politics. He's certainly a very skillful political presence and a great campaigner. And he also has perhaps the worst environment to run in. He's in a district that the Democrats believe is winnable. Again, given the environment of Donald Trump, given the president's soft deductions, the budget, and how it impacted New Jersey, and the perception that the president is an antagonist to women. And that's energized and galvanized the Democratic base. And, of course, national-level Democrats see opportunities here as they try to build to a 24-seat majority. Jay Weber is perceived to be a weak general election candidate, which is one of the reasons he's facing a primary candidate, because there are at least two chairs in that district, in Passaic County and Essex County, who believe that Mr. Weber is too far to the right for the general election. So they've put up this JAG officer from Totowa named Anthony G, who is giving Weber a pretty significant race. But Weber, once again, ever the artful campaigner, has already shown that G has real issues as a Republican candidate. He could not publicly say who he voted for president in the last three presidential elections. And Weber told voters who that was. He said, look, that means he voted for Obama twice and Clinton. And so Weber will be a very tough out in a primary, Fernando, in my opinion. And those who think that he's going to be easy in this environment because he's pro-life without exception, and again, they salivate over that, believing that he'd be an excellent opportunity to gin up further this women's movement, the Me Too movement, I think are in for a rude awakening, because I think that Jay Weber is a very, very serious candidate, very highly prepared candidate, and he always finds a way to put his opponent back on his or her heels. And so, again, the Democrats have on paper an excellent candidate, a retired Navy helicopter pilot who served in the Middle East, and a former prosecutor, Mikey Sherrill, who has all the organizational support, and she has the national interest, the national passion, really, of the Democratic Party behind her, which wants that seat. And again, Fernando, as you know, longtime U.S. Representative Rodney Frelinghuysen opted not to run again for a variety of reasons, leaving the seat open and giving Democrats that shot. I do see Weber likely to win the primary based on his experience, and I see that as a very, very tough general election battle between Weber and Sherrill.
Well, Max, concerning Frelinghuysen, I mean, I heard different things, but was there one specific reason that you heard why he chose not to run again for another term?
I've heard different things, Fernando. I do think that he really pushed hard to get Trump to agree to the Gateway Tunnel funding, and that was seen as Rodney Frelinghuysen's baby. And when Trump, on Mr. Frelinghuysen's timeline, didn't respond, I think he was frustrated. I also think that there was an ethics committee inquiry into a letter that he wrote to a bank executive, and Mr. Frelinghuysen wrote that letter noting to this finance contributor of his that one of his employees was, quote-unquote, a ringleader of that movement opposed to the congressman. And so it looked like old boy network strong-arming. It looked very bad. I think it certainly increased the passions of those Rodney Frelinghuysen foes and energized Mikey Sherrill's campaign.
You know, Max, one of the things that makes 2018 interesting, certainly with House races this November, certainly the senior United States Senator, Bob Menendez, and his seat will be up also this November. It's interesting. It's a very interesting dynamic because I know you mentioned the numbers right now. In the House, the Democratic Party, they only needs like a flip, maybe like 25 seats or so, I think, to maybe take the House back.
Right.
I could be mistaken, right? Now, on the Senate side, I mean, I believe I think 8 Republican Senate seats nationwide that are going to be up for grabs, but they're going to be 24 Democratic Senate seats up for grabs. And listen, let's be honest. I mean, I don't just say this because I'm a friend of Bob's and I know Bob personally, but Bob's going to win in a walk in November. He's going to win by more than a few touchdowns. I think Bob, you know, the worst is behind him in terms of that ridiculous witch hunt that he was subjected to. And I think he'll win in a walk. And I'm not saying this because I'm trying to slight the Republican Party in New Jersey. But let's be honest, for as long as I can remember, what has the New Jersey GOP done, Max, for years? They've tried to run candidates that they think are tough. It doesn't materialize that way. And Bob is very resourceful. Bob is a good campaigner. He's a good fundraiser, too. But he's been good on his feet, though. And I think that's what gets Bob, I think that's what gets Bob's, you know, over the top this November. What do you think?
Well, I can't deny that he's a very dangerous candidate. In a way, Jay Weber is kind of the Bob Menendez of Morris County. I do think that people would be mistaken to underestimate Bob Haugen, this retired pharmaceutical executive who's running for the U.S. Senate seat. I was at a Cumberland County Republican convention just this week, Fernando, where he pledged to put $40 million into that race. $40 million.
That's
and
a lot of money.
He's
yeah.
A lot of money. He's a Marine, businessman, family man, and he's getting better in his public presentation. And so I think that Republicans at that convention, with very little to celebrate, and in fact, great disarray in their party as they attempt to align behind a congressional candidate in the 2nd District, seemed pretty happy with the U.S. Senate pick. And I'm not going to say that I completely disagree. I think that it's going to be very difficult for him to beat Bob Menendez. I think that perhaps the calculation with his candidacy is more a matter of alignment so that it's not just a complete disaster for Republicans in New Jersey. But if I were Menendez or the Menendez campaign, I would be paying attention to him. And I think they are.
No, I agree with you. They certainly are. And the interesting dynamic about the two Bobs running is that they were both born in Union City. You know, one went to Union Hill High School, one went to Emerson. I mean, I'm from here, so I kind of know the dynamic. So it's really interesting about the fact that they kind of come from the same background and obviously went in different directions career-wise, but now the showdown is on here as November, you know, again, is maybe 7-8 months away. So you're right, it'll be very interesting in terms of how Menendez handles this candidacy. But it sort of brings me back also thinking about Bob's impact. And I don't want to spend too much time on Hudson, but one of the things that makes this Civil War interesting, and you wrote about this also, Max. And hey, folks, if you haven't checked out www.insidernj.com, Max Pizarro's work is sensational. Check out his stuff daily. It's great. You wrote a very interesting piece about the Bayonne mayoral race, which is getting a little sexy right now. In just a little over 2 months to go in that race. And, you know, again, Bayonne Mayor Jimmy Davis has pledged his allegiance to the county executive, so certainly that, you know, the sides are being drawn. I know that Bob Menendez has come out publicly for Jimmy Davis on a number of occasions. How do you see that mayoral race panning out in Bayonne?
Well, it's interesting. It's almost the first opportunity for Menendez to once again get reanimated with politics as he came back from the grave. He stepped out and saw Bayonne, and so he is now charging like a wild bull at that town and wants a win. And certainly Jimmy Davis, as his candidate, is in a pretty good position from hearing everyone I talk to. Fernando, I don't know if you hear the same thing, but it's going to take some muscle and grease for his challenger, former Assemblyman Jason O'Donnell, to make an impact there. Look, it's happened before. I'm sure you remember this. I think I saw you around at the time when Bob Menendez got in on that West New York mayoral race. He was back in Sal Vega. He went all in. I think it was, I'm trying to remember, 2011. Was it 2010?
2011.
Mm-hmm. 2011. And really, you couldn't walk a block without seeing Bob Menendez's face on the side of a truck or the side of a wall. And it looked like Vega was in a pretty good position to win. And, of course, we know that Mayor Felix Roque upset Vega. And so I've seen it happen before. And I think the O'Donnell people are sort of banking on things lapsing into a sleeper situation, and maybe they can make something happen, and I'm keeping an eye on it.
No, listen, definitely, and you're doing great work, a great article this week that you put up on the Bayonne mayoral race. Again, I don't like to trust polls. We all know that polls can be very misleading. We learned that 2 years ago in November of 2016. You never know with polls sometimes. So right now it looks like Bayonne Mayor Jimmy Davis is almost a lock to win re-election. We'll see. I know that his council seats are maybe a little bit in jeopardy. Those could be interesting, though, right, Max?
I think so, Fernando. I must tell you, I have not paid attention to that. Maybe you could tell me about that. I don't know enough about the council contenders at present.
Well, I mean, to my understanding, again, the idea that perhaps all of Davis' council seats would sweep through again is come under some contention. I know that the different wards and the at-large bids are certainly going to get a lot of attention, but you're right, though. It seems like this is going to be a good test in terms of not just, you know, the power that Menendez still exerts countywide, but also sort of like the opening round of the Civil War to see, you know, the sides being taken, who's going to come out on top. Maybe this Bayonne mayoral race might shed some light as to how it's moving forward.
Right. Do you have any evidence that, pardon me, but that's a critical question, I think. To what extent are Stack and Phillip really going to engage in Bayonne and make it that first shot in this war? I don't have the answer to that question, right? I don't know that Stack, for example, after he backed Dawn Zimmer's reelection last year and then she decided not to run, I don't know that Stack has an appetite to get involved in some of these local battles. Having said that, I would still watch, because if he sees a poll or sees an opportunity where O'Donnell can gain an edge, I would imagine that he'd get in there if he isn't already.
Well, I agree with you. I think him and Phillip are watching that race closely, and if maybe the polls do tighten between now and May. I mean, listen, there's still, like, I think maybe 8-9 weeks to go until Election Day in Bayonne. And listen, 8 to 9 weeks is a lifetime, maybe, or not even, in local politics. So, you know, it can change on a whim in terms of what's going on there. Max, so something that just came to mind, because as I was reading some pieces on Insider, and I wanted to make sure I got your take on this, because we were talking about the governor before. I know it's very early in his administration. I know there's been considerable discussion about the budget he proposed. And I know between now and June 30th, when, you know, by the state constitution, it has to be ratified. Otherwise, the state will be shut down like it was last year. What are you hearing, though, about how this budget is being received? Have you had a chance to look at it? Is there anything that concerns you or maybe stands out for you, like, wow, this is going to get a lot of heat on the governor because of maybe what's being proposed in the budget?
Well, sure there is, Fernando. Look, there's $1.5 billion in new taxes, and that is a third rail in New Jersey politics. And certainly the way he unveiled this budget has engendered criticism. Once you begin talking to a tax-encumbered state population about raising taxes, I think you've empowered your rivals, or that's the worry among those backers of Murphy. And certainly Assembly Republican leader John Bramnick feels very re-engaged at the moment, because he sees an opportunity to take the initiative away from the Democrats who keep pointing at Donald Trump and turn this into a discussion about taxes. And so I think that the governor will certainly have a considerable distance to cover to get to a budget that can pass, and I would imagine that Steve Sweeney will play a large role in that. They do have different tax plans, and I can't imagine that it'll get to the point it did last year. I think that what will probably happen is South Jersey will just be in a pretty good position to get what it wants. It'll certainly get some funding toward the hospital or some other project or Christmas tree that it needs to decorate. And I would imagine that after some political saber rattling that they pass the budget.
Well, listen, certainly, again, there's still time between June 30th when, by, you know, according to state law, it has to be ratified by then. If not, certainly the state would shut down. You know, Max, I always had an immensely healthy respect for you as a journalist. I mean, you are as good as it comes in New Jersey, as far as I'm concerned. I don't just say this because we're colleagues, but I mean, I've always had this perception of you before I came on with Insider and Jay to start doing this podcast. And certainly, I think you're a good person to ask about this. We know that journalism and the institution of journalism has come under attack for some time now. And again, I think this goes beyond what we've seen in the last couple of years, in the recent presidential cycle. We know that the term fake news gets thrown around a lot, almost in a cavalier sort of way by both parties. As a journalist, though, how much harder has your job become as it pertains to, you know, being out there, being reliable, which you are, being accurate, which you always have been, and, you know, being truthful and responsible? How hard is it for you or any journalist right now in this political climate that we're living in, whether it's New Jersey or on a national level? Do you ever feel the squeeze a little bit and you just sometimes throw up your hands and say, oh, my God, this is ridiculous already?
It's a great question, Fernando. It's a terrific question. I just wanted to add one thing to that discussion we were having about the taxes. I do think Republicans running for re-election in federal races are energized by that narrative of Murphy introducing $1.5 or $1.7 billion in new taxes, because, again, they're looking for a way to change the narrative. So if you're Leonard Lance and you're running the 7th District for re-election, one of the Republicans who opted to run again this year, unlike Frank Lobiondo and Rodney Frelinghuysen, you want to change that narrative from Trump functionary to, look what the Democrats are doing. When you give them a little bit of power, they want to raise your taxes $1.7 billion. You need an adult in the room, re-elect Leonard Lance. Again, He's running for federal office, but it's part of the Republican effort to try to show how too much power concentrated with Democrats is not a good thing for New Jersey. Now, to your other question, Fernando, I really think it comes down to the belief that one has in journalism. And we undertake this job, and it doesn't pay well, of course, and it is difficult. And you essentially are putting yourself in the middle of a lot of discomfort much of the time. And so you accept that to begin with. And I started as a journalist in Wyoming. I'm from New Jersey, but I started in Wyoming as a prison reporter. I worked that gig for 2 years, and I think I got a very good initiative into just how difficult the job is. And so I don't see it as more difficult now. I just see I see it as more important than ever, because there are fewer of us who have that institutional formation and who have that that reverence, really, for the written word and that reverence for the Fourth Estate. In other words, we understand the critical role that journalism plays in the maintenance of our form of government and the maintenance of our way of life. And so it's a tremendously exciting job. I think it's also a job that just by its very nature creates a high level of discomfort. And that's something that we go through and because of the love of those ideals that it represents.
Max, the perception, and again, I mean, as someone who teaches political science and sociology, certainly as an academic, we all know what's very pervasive ideologically in academia. There seems to be a perception for some time, and maybe you can help me dispel it or either reinforce it or maybe do neither. There seems to be maybe on a national level, even on a state level, that journalists, by and large, tend to sort of subscribe to a very left-leaning ideology that, again, the perception that the mainstream media is very liberal and that the mainstream media for many years, you know, seems to have an agenda. And for many in the country, that's a talking point that resonates with certain people. And when you hear that, Max, because, I mean, listen, I've been following you for years, and I've interacted with you on several occasions. I mean, you're as straight shooter as it comes and very, I think, down the middle of a guy. But when you hear those criticisms about media and about journalism where, oh, my God, it's just a bunch of liberal reporters with their agendas and what they're trying to do, just like liberal professors and academia, liberals just trying to brainwash the country and brainwash viewers or readers. When you hear that, what comes to mind?
Well, I think it's an interesting discussion. I think certainly our television reporting has become tremendously bifurcated, so that it's either one or the other, and it's clearly being filtered in one direction or the other, and depending on your predilection or your political position, you gravitate one way or the other. And perhaps it's always been that way. We've always had this tug of war, and journalists find themselves caught in that, or maybe they willfully go after it. But I think that we have an obligation to be fair. We have an obligation to be objective. And whatever the chatter is out there, that people will endeavor to convince others of, we have to really be determined to create a forum as reporters that gives people a real public square of dialogue, debate, and objective analysis, Fernando. And so, yes, I hear all that. I see it. I think in certain cases it's justified. I think in other cases it's not. And we'd have to go through them individually. I do think that certainly a reporter has to keep an open mind. And to the extent that the reporter has to tolerate different points of view, if in fact we go back to the roots of liberalism and John Stuart Mill, and we examine under a microscope the correlation between liberal philosophy and tolerance,
then perhaps the journalists, a number of them, would have to be guilty as charged, because you have to tolerate different points of view in order to synthesize. However, I would say this too. You also need to have a sense of right and wrong. You have to very much, in order to be effective as a journalist, you have to know when you have to go and pursue something and absolutely undertake a specific point of view that is in the best interest of the reader, of the person participating in the democratic experiment. And I think that to the extent that we are truthful and real with ourselves, that's never determined or defined by a party. It's not the Republican Party or the Democratic Party or the left or the right that has a hand on justice, that has a handhold on truth. And so if we make truth and justice the North Star, we don't get hung up on party affiliation or ideological expression. As much as we'd like to really get into the granular understanding of these terms, ultimately it's about a larger alliance that we have with the truth.
That's a great take, Max. And Max, listen, you've been a gentleman today. Just a couple more minutes of your time. I know that you have some place to be at this afternoon. I might most likely run into you later on today if you're going to the same location I'm going to.
Yes, I think so.
But real quick, what journalists really, or journalists, help shape the way that you write the news, and which journalists have had the most profound impact on you in terms of, you know, growing up reading them, seeing their demeanor, seeing the way that they practice journalism? Who really had a profound impact in the way that helped you become the journalist that you are today, Max?
Well, I think the guy that I remember reading an awful lot of was Pete Hamill. He wrote for a lot of New York papers. I think he was the editor of the Daily News or the New York Post at one point. But I remember he wrote a column, and I always looked forward to reading it just because of the way it was written, Fernando. I just thought his writing was so good. And he was a person who really tried to get into the heart and soul of the city he loved, the Big Apple. And I just thought that he did it very effectively. And he always gave me that sense of being there right on the ground, whether it was his eyewitness account of a car accident or a city hall fight. I felt that there was an immediacy to it and an honesty about it. Finally, for me, really, it was the written word. It was the great use of the American language in his pieces that touched me.
Wow, that's profound, Max. And Max, right before I let you go, I know what I do every week on my show is I grill my guests, and I always try to be fair and have a good dialogue, which I've had with you successfully today. Real quick, the floor is yours. Now it's your turn to ask me a question if you want. That's what I try to extend to my guests every week. What do you have?
Well, that's a great part of your show, Fernando. I would ask you, what do you see as the potential political ramifications of Stack and Fulop empowered? In other words, do you think that it creates a base for Fulop to then run for statewide office? Or do you think it really is a matter of, is it more a platform for Fulop to run for statewide office, or is it more a matter of Stack being able to exert county control? Because what's puzzled some people is he's really a local animal. So why would he get outside of his base unless there's some other design? Could you untangle that for me a little bit?
Well, very briefly, I think that, as you said before, I think their alliance is very convenient. I think it's very pragmatic. But I think that Stack's desire is, A, to become chairman of the ACDO, which is still a very powerful entity, and not just local, but statewide. I think Brian's content with doing that. I think part of me still believes keeping an eye on higher office. I'm sure he's very curious to see what Cory Booker's going to do in 2 years, whether or not he's going to put his name out there in the primary to run against President Trump. And if that Senate seat becomes available, I know it's something that he might be interested in. I mean, listen, I know you heard the same rumors I did. I know that when Bob was in his darkest hours, there was some rumbling statewide that Steve was maybe trying to eye that seat if if Bob had to step down. And we all know that on the steps of the federal building, when Bob made that famous speech and he said, "For those of you who were digging my political grave, I'll remember you." I think we both know, Max, who he was talking about. So people don't know that. I think they're just not paying attention. I think that their relationship is very unique in terms of what their agendas are. But I said this last night on my local podcast. I think the lines are being drawn of, on one side, you're going to have Tom DeGise and Representative Cires and Bob Menendez. And on the other side, I think what you're seeing is Stack and Bullop and some of the other local mayors. And I think it's going to boil down to who's going to raise more money, who's going to get the ground game out there. And listen, I'm a big comic book fan. When Captain America Civil War came out 2 years ago, I was excited because it's one of those battles you don't know who's going to win. I don't know who's going to win this, Max, but if I had to put my money on somebody, I think in the end, I think all the parties are just going to sit down, iron out their hostilities, and they're going to find a common ground. I don't think it benefits anybody in this war to just try to take the other out. I think at the end of the day, both parties are going to sit down and come to some sort of agreement, whether it's convincing the G's not to run, whether Stack becomes county chair, and in return, he's not going to push for anything. And by that, maybe Sacco is allowed to run next May for another term, and maybe when that term is over, he won't run again. I think there's still a lot of compromise to be made. I mean, I know a civil war is a sexy headline, Max, and I know it gets people reading, it gets people excited. But I think if I had to put money on the table, I think whether it's in the next few weeks or months, I just think all these parties together are going to sit down in a room somewhere, whether it's at the Coach House Diner in North Bergen or, you know, the Brownstone in Edgewater or somewhere secluded. I think I really think they're all going to get together and come to a compromise. I just think that, Max. I mean, I don't know what you think about that theory of mine.
That's interesting. Look, it certainly is what politicians in power tend to do. So I think that there's something there. The fact that they haven't put forward the name of a challenger to Geese is curious to me. Not that they really would this early on and risk that person being eviscerated. But
sure,
it is certainly a fascinating, whether it goes to a full-blown war or just a diner booth deal, it's going to be interesting either way, my friend.
Oh, definitely. And Max, listen, I appreciate you coming on today. I know you're in a rush. I'll see you in a little while, but I want to thank you for coming on tonight. I definitely want you back on the show maybe for a little bit longer on another evening during our regular time. I know that your schedule fluctuates a lot with being everywhere. And, you know, again, I think being the best journalist in New Jersey. So I want to thank you for being on here tonight, and I appreciate you being a fan of Politically Direct, Max.
Fernando, it's my privilege and pleasure to be on your show. Thank you so much for having me. It was delightful, and I'd be delighted to appear again.
Definitely. Safe driving. I'll see you shortly.
Thank you, sir. I'll see you later, Fernando. Thanks a lot now.
Take care, Max.
Take care now.
Take care. All righty. Folks, again, there today, a special Thursday afternoon edition with journalist extraordinaire, the editor-in-chief of Insider NJ, Max Pizarro. Covered a lot here today in this hour on the show. So, again, I have to thank Max Pizarro for a lot of interesting tidbits today. I think a lot of people listening this afternoon certainly got a pretty good understanding of not just this potential civil war taking place in Hudson County. Still, a lot remains to be seen about where it's going to go. Perhaps the upcoming Bayonne mayoral election is going to maybe be the first test of, you know, which side is going to maybe start showing some muscle in this war, as Bayonne Mayor Jimmy Davis, again, has pledged support for the county executive, Tom DeGise. And then we'll find out exactly whether or not the opposing faction will, you know, throw their names in there and try to, you know, help out the challenger, former Assemblyman Jason O'Donnell. So we'll see what happens with that race, as we're talking about maybe 6-7 weeks away from Election Day in Bayonne. So stay tuned for that. And, of course, you know, great insight by Max, again, about the budget and certainly a lot of the scrutiny and backlash that Governor Murphy is facing right now because of this budget. And folks, listen, I've talked about this on the air before, and certainly as a homeowner and taxpayer, we're overtaxed enough as it is in New Jersey. And I know a lot of residents, both Republicans and Democrats, whether they're elected officials, whether they're advocates, bloggers, you name it, have all shown some concern about what this budget represents, what direction that Governor Murphy is taking New Jersey. We're going to find out certainly again some of the more pressing issues that he is really determined to see through to the very end, whether it includes raising the minimum wage to $15, also whether outright legalization of marijuana in New Jersey is a viable option. You know, of course, taxation and making it, listen, no different than alcohol and cigarettes, and, you know, trying to get the revenue from those sales to help the sort of the revenue streams in New Jersey. And of course, you know, not just that, but also sort of the political climate that the governor is trying to project now, as he has been very adamant as it pertains to being an opponent of President Trump. And, you know, again, it's a long time between now and 2020, but again, a lot of insiders will tell you that what Governor Murphy is trying to do is sort of lay the blueprint out to perhaps be a challenger in 2020 as a sitting governor. And listen, he's going to have a crowded field in the Democratic Party. There's no doubt about it, even within his own state here, whether it's junior Senator Cory Booker, whether senior Senator Bob Menendez perhaps may want to throw his name into the ring in 2 years. Who knows? So it could be a very crowded field for Governor Murphy. But first things first, I think it's going to be very interesting to see between now and June when the budget has to be passed by the legislature and has to be signed into law by the governor, okay, by June 30th. If not, obviously the state will shut down because the state constitution requires that the budget be passed. So a lot of interesting things remain to be seen as it pertains to the influence that Governor Murphy is going to exert. And listen, of course, even as Max mentioned before during today's conversation, you know, the fact of what influence and impact is State Senate President Steve Sweeney going to have. I mean, he's one of the more powerful Democrats in the state. Probably you could argue he's probably the second most powerful Democrat in New Jersey in terms of a legislative level, with the governor being, you know, at the top. But it'll be very interesting to see what's going to happen in these next few months as the budget is going to be discussed, and certainly as the budget is going to be dissected, I'm sure meticulously, not just by legislators, but also by the media. And again, you know, kudos to Max for really pointing that out today and, you know, really giving us a sense of what lies ahead so early on in the administration of Governor Phil Murphy. And I'll tell you, folks, again, you know, I can't say enough about the great job that Max does. And again, I don't just say this because he's my colleague and we work together on Insider NJ, but listen, I've known Max for many years. He's as solid as they come when it comes to journalism here in New Jersey. I mean, this is a guy with incredible sources and a guy that really knows his stuff. And folks, if you have not had a chance to read his articles on Insider NJ, again, you definitely have to make it a point, as I said, to go to www.insidernj.com, sign up for that morning intelligence briefing. You'll see all the great work, not just of Max. I mean, listen, I don't want to just, you know, single out Max and not sort of give credit. I mean, there are a lot of great contributors here with Insider NJ. So I definitely don't want to, you know, single anybody out and not give credit where it's due. I mean, we have great contributors here at Insider NJ, whether it's Jeffrey Brindle, whether it's Daniel Munoz. We have other contributors, whether it's Pete Onelia, our general manager, whether it is even, you know, the new partnership that Insider NJ has formed with Steve Adubato, you know, great journalist statewide. So, again, it's something that if you've not made a point to get more acclimated with Insider NJ, folks, you definitely should, because without question, I would tell you that I think it's going to be one of these type of journalistic forces that's going to be here for a long, long time in New Jersey. And again, I'm proud to partner with them. And certainly, again, having Max on today really shed some light about what we can expect in a Phil Murphy, New Jersey. And of course, what we can expect electorally in some very interesting races statewide in the weeks and months ahead. So, well, folks, listen, you know, what can I say? I mean, the hour goes by quickly here. And, you know, again, I appreciate you tuning in today for a special Thursday edition of Politically Direct. We will return to our regularly scheduled time next Thursday night at 8 p.m. So, again, don't forget to mark that on your calendars. And, of course, with the reminders you get on social media about the show itself, and certainly we'll be discussing not just as I'll be heading off to State Senator Stack event a little later on this afternoon. So I'll certainly give you my thoughts and my observations from this very big political party coming up later this afternoon at the Grey Cliff in North Jersey. So we'll certainly have a lot to discuss next week in terms of who's going to make their face available today. And certainly that'll certainly give a perception today, folks, about who's aligning with who right now in the Civil War here in Hudson County. So we'll definitely have a lot to talk about. And folks, again, if you missed any part of this afternoon's broadcast, you can check out my entire interview in its entirety with Editor-in-Chief Max Pizarro. You can always go to www.blogtalkradio.com/politicallydirectNJ from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. You can certainly, if you have any topic or issue, you want to let me know how the show's going so far. The feedback's been wonderful. But if you have something to say about Politically Direct, please write to the show's inbox, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. And don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me directly on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando. Follow me on Twitter @FernandoUribeJr. Don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook. We're almost at 300 likes, and really the traffic has been really great. And folks, again, I cannot say enough about my partnership with InsiderNJ, and I can't say it enough. Don't forget to check out InsiderNJ every single day, ladies and gentlemen, by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Again, when you go to the website, sign up. It's absolutely free. You can sign up with your email for their morning intelligence briefing. You'll get great articles, great insight, great columns delivered right to your inbox in your email. You can check it on your smartphone when you're walking your dog, maybe going to get your morning coffee, maybe going for a run. You can check it out on your tablet as you're having breakfast, whatever. Trust me, you'll enjoy the daily morning intelligence briefings that you get from InsiderNJ. Folks, I can't say enough how proud I am to partner with them. And certainly I'm grateful to them for their faith in my abilities to bring you this podcast each and every week. So don't forget, folks, start your day with InsiderNJ. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, I can't say it enough. Thank you for tuning in this afternoon. Again, we will return to our regularly scheduled primetime hour next Thursday night at 8 p.m. as we do every single week. So I appreciate you tuning in this afternoon. Again, if you missed any part of today's broadcast, always check it out, www.blogtalkradio.com/politicallydirectNJ. So whether it's on your morning commute, getting a daily workout in, walking your dog, doing laundry, for my students, both past and present, whether you're doing homework, studying for exams, hopefully as we're crossing our fingers, folks, as hopefully spring is right around the corner and hopefully warmer days are ahead, tune in here and you'll be happy that you did. And don't forget, it's real, it's here, it's politically direct. Good night, Moonaki, New Jersey, one of the nicer towns in Bergen County. I'll be there shortly, later on, for the very interesting political evening on a Thursday night here in North Jersey. I'll see you next week, folks, on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.